this hierarchy of who has the right to live, who deserves not to suffer. As an indigenous person, the fur trade represents so much more to me than just animal abuse. It represents cultural genocide.
That is fully summarized. There were six or eight in the raiding party.
In this racist front, who would not know about the terrible...
These kinds of actions are going to be more and more frequent.
Every laboratory can help from information from inside the lab, from someone who works there, who's sick of hearing the animals scream.
They found the animals crippled and helpless, unable to use their arms and legs. No food or medical care. Broken bones. Fingers and toes torn off.
14 of the 2 dozen protesters are blocking the entrance of the...
That's why the receptionists say the animals have been taken to an
Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with co-host and news guy, Rob Moore. He's doing some stretches.
I'm doing my
limber,
breathing exercises.
Getting limber to do the show. And Lamia is, of course, teching for us today.
Hello, hello.
We have a bunch of different things going on for the program. At the beginning of the hour, we're going to hear from Rob. He's going to give us our weekly news digest. And then we are going to hear a pre-recorded interview from him that I'll actually let him introduce, and then I'll tell you about the interview that we're doing at 11:30.
That's with Sakaya Hemi. We spoke with Sakaya back in August about the dry fishery and the dolphin hunt in Japan. She works with the Elsa Nature Conservancy, and she's been working for decades against the dolphin hunt in Japan, and she was speaking with us about all the details in Japan about the hunt there. And I also wanted to take 10 minutes with her and just ask her about animal rights in general in Japan and see what it was like there and what the movement was like there. So we did another 10-minute interview of that, and today was a good opportunity to play that. So we'll be playing that at about 11:15.
Great. And then we will jump back and hear from Jason Bayless, who is a friend of mine, who's currently working for PETA, specifically PETA 2. He's been involved with PETA for about 4 years, so PETA as in People for the Ethical Treatment of Animal. I realize I use a lot of these acronyms now without stepping
back. People may
back.
Not know what they are.
So
yeah.
PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and he's the Senior Youth Projects Specialist. And when I talked to him on the phone about a week and a half ago, I was asking him how things were going. We hadn't chatted in a while, and he said, "Oh, really good. The movie is just wrapping up." And I was surprised, and I said the movie. He said, "Yeah, you know, PETA decided they were going to make a documentary about me." I mean, I've always thought Jason was an amazing activist. He came and visited me from Texas a few years ago, and when I picked him up, we got on the bus, and he was handing out leaflets within 30 seconds. It was really amazing. He's nonstop. So anyway, he's been touring with the Warped tour, which is a bunch of different punk bands that go around North America. I think it's just North America, and they tour, and they have a lot of youth following them. So that's a great opportunity for Jason to do outreach with PETA. So he was on the road, and he's had a documentary about him as an activist, but it's mostly about kind of featuring the bands and learning about youth activism and animal rights. So we're going to find out about the movie called Wake Up Screaming, which is a full-length documentary that's going to be coming out, I think, in November. And we're going to find out about what it was like to make that documentary and some of the things that he's learned about youth, being a youth specialist for PETA, and some of the things that he's gone through with these various different punk bands. So it should be a fun interview. We're
going to
be talking with him about that at 11:30. And the website for people who are interested, if you're near a computer right now, is wakeupscreamingmovie.com. So check it out.
And our website, of course, is www.animalvoices.ca. Although I didn't actually post any details about today's show. It's just one of those things that happens.
We will. We'll get around to it.
You know, it's World Vegan Day today, so happy World Vegan Day to everybody out there.
Surprise, surprise. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah, it was started by the Vegan Society of the United Kingdom in 1994.
Those Brits.
Those Brits. To commemorate its 50th anniversary. And it's held November 1st. Every year, which is pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
In this week's news, lots about avian flu. I'll start off from a story this morning in Toronto Star. When federal officials called a news conference yesterday afternoon, it was, in fact, to report what they've known all along. A few birds in Canada are infected with avian flu, but probably not the dreaded H5N1 strain. Jim Clark of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency told reporters, experts worldwide know that this virus, in one form or another, has circulated among wild birds around the world for hundreds or perhaps even thousands of years. Again, this is nothing new. Then why, many in Ottawa were left wondering, call a news conference to announce that there's nothing new to report? The official answer, transparency. Within hours, the Ottawa news conference had spawned news flashes around the world carried by CNN, Fox News, even Radio New Zealand. Some in Ottawa quietly raised fears that these stories might raise problems with Canada's trading partners. After all, it took just three pigeons that didn't even carry the avian flu, just flu antibodies, to briefly close Australia's borders to Canadian birds 2 weeks ago. Between 4,000 and 4,800 samples were taken across the country from August to late September, and what the survey detected was the H5 subtype of avian influenza in 28 wild ducks in Quebec and 5 in Manitoba. Those preliminary findings haven't yet determined which of the 9 H5 varieties those Canadian ducks have. It's highly unlikely, officials said, that the 33 ducks have been infected with the dreaded H5N1 variety of influenza. All known human infections with avian flu strains were reported passed from infected domestic poultry. Nevertheless, officials cautioned that hunters should use proper hand hygiene and kitchen safety measures when dressing and cooking dead ducks. Again, I think that's not, you know, pinpointing the actual problem. Why don't they talk about maybe you shouldn't dress and cook dead ducks?
But another option.
Instead, they're talking about just use proper hand hygiene when doing so. Anyway, Band-Aid solution. Out of The Guardian from the UK.
It's a nice mix always of news and editorializing on Animal Voices.
I got some stuff to say,
very
people.
Very blunt. It's beautiful.
It's good.
Sales of chicken are plummeting in urban areas of the UK as customers, fearful of avian flu reaching the food chain, turn to alternative meats. The story says that while rural butchers and established free-range outlets report no downturn in sales, many town butchers say their poultry trade is down by around 50%. News of the beginnings of a consumer boycott came as a Scotland Yard report revealed that millions of people could be stopped from using buses, tubes, and trains if a flu pandemic hit Britain. The report warns of outbreaks of public disorder and says police could be sent to guard stocks of anti-flu drugs in chemists, hospitals, and clinics amid fears that people may break in to steal medicines. The report also warns that quarantine zones may have to be enforced. Next, from Robert Cohen from notmilk.com. He writes these emails, these newsletters every now and again. Again, that's notmilk.com, kind of an entertaining site. He says, on October 29th, 2005, I reported that University of Minnesota investigators had visited 110 dairy farms in four states and determined that 92.7% of those farms tested positive for salmonella. I was surprised by the angry responses from a few of my dairy farmer readers. My columns often make news with milk industry insiders who call the Not Milk deceptive. One young woman claimed that salmonella will, on, quote, rare occasions, test positive in cows, but it is extremely rare to detect salmonella or other fecal bacteria in milk that has been loaded on milk trucks. Her claim was that once the milk is collected, filtered, and picked up by the milk truck, it is clean and wholesome. I've got some very bad news for her and other hard-working farmers. The September 2004 issue of the journal Dairy Science contains a study in which USDA researchers documented the presence of fecal bacteria, including salmonella, in milk that had been loaded onto refrigerated trucks. Three government scientists tested 861 bulk milk trucks in 21 states. Coliform bacteria, which is bacteria originating in cow colons, were detected in 95% of the milk samples. That's 818 out of 860. Got dairy? Got feces. The milk may be lily white and appear to be pure, but there is nothing wholesome about drinking a fluid tainted with fecal bacteria. I've always wondered about this, he says. If health inspectors detect the presence of mouse turds in a vat of apple cider, an extremely rare event, the entire batch is condemned. Yet, if those same inspectors were to detect the presence of cow feces in cow's milk, it happens with every batch, that same product is routinely packaged and distributed to consumers. I thought that was something.
That's disgusting.
I know.
It's World Vegan Day for a reason.
I know. I thought that would be a good point to illustrate why to celebrate World Vegan Day.
That's awful.
In case you're wondering why to cut out dairy from your diet.
All just right. One more reason.
Exactly.
Besides the inherent cruelty.
Yeah. Indeed.
Right.
If it's only a personal trip, that's enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll read one more little report, sort of in honor of World Vegan Day. It's a nice article from the Electric New Paper out of Asia. It says, Tuesday is World Vegan Day, so put aside your steak knife and head for the veggie patch. There are many different types of vegetarians. Vegans, in addition to avoiding meat and fish, abstain from animal products like eggs and dairy products, as well as products tested on animals or made from animals, like leather or beeswax. Many turn vegan because they object to the killing of animals. Web editor Zef Shen, 31, said, I turned vegetarian overnight 11 years ago when I realized the impact my diet had on the welfare of animals, my health, and the environment. Meat is just an illogical choice. I did not want to play any minute part in the suffering of animals. Mrs. Helga Ko, 53, turned vegan only at the age of 50 after finally having the courage to listen to my inner voice, she said. She added, there is so much suffering in this world, why add to it? There is absolutely no need for us to imprison, torture, and slaughter our fellow animals. And being vegan in Singapore is easier than you think. Communications engineer Santaran, 24, said, it's even easier here than in traditionally vegetarian-friendly places like India because you have many Chinese vegetarian stalls and they don't use dairy. Mr. Santaran recommends the creative vegetarian vegan stalls at Circuit Road Hawker Center, in case there's anyone in Singapore listening. He said it's a one-stop vegan paradise. They have all kinds of vegan versions of laksa, wonton noodles, satay, otah, char siu, and other foods. If you are keen to try being a vegan, yoga teacher Vivienne Spanopoulos advises that you change your current diet one step at a time. If you have an average diet, begin by not eating red meat. The next step may be to either eliminate chicken and seafood or remove processed foods, excess sugar, and white flour. After that, remove all dairy products and cow feces, and consider taking out tea, coffee, and alcohol. During the transition, there can be some uncomfortable symptoms, usually lasting only a few days as your body learns to do without certain foods. You may briefly suffer headaches, irritability, weakness, bloating, constipation, or diarrhea, acne, or skin rashes. Ms. Spanopoulos explained, these processes are triggered as soon as the digestive system is given a chance to clean out, so the toxins that reside in the digestive tract are removed and eliminated through the lungs, skin, and bowel. Once this occurs, the individual experiences a greater sense of well-being, usually an increase in energy and vitality, and less need or desire for meat and processed foods. For those of you who are wishing to make the transition and wonder why the hell am I having headaches and weakness and bloating, that may be why. But it's World Vegan Day. It's a good day to make the transition.
Okay, Rob, so I'm expecting that somebody in, his, her car or is waking up now or whatever, turning on the radio is not a vegetarian or vegan, and they say, well, what about World Omnivorous Day? Why isn't
it's every other day of the year, man.
Right. Yeah, because I've always, every time there's like a, celebrate this group day, someone from the dominant group's usually saying, well, we want our own day. So, yeah, I guess
they can make a banner for every other day of the year and walk around with it.
Yeah.
So if any of you have any stories about turning vegan, or if you're going to try to turn vegan this month starting today, why don't you drop us a line? Our email is animalvoices@ciut.fm, and we might follow up with you in the future. So right now we're going to go into our interview with Sakaya Hemi. She's speaking with us from Japan. I asked her a few questions about animal rights in Japan. Our first interview with her is archived on our site, animalvoices.ca. It's under August 30th, and we talk about the dolphin hunt in Japan, which she will also refer to in this interview. It's just about 10 minutes long. Here is Sakaya Hemi on CIUT 89.5 FM. Sakaya, welcome to Animal Voices.
Thank you.
Is the animal rights movement a strong one in Japan?
Well, I don't think so. You know, the movement to protect pets, especially dogs and cats, is strong in Japan. And also that we have the movement to protect wild animals, which are reducing its number. And there are movements to stop animal abuse, such as animal experiments. But that's called animal protection movement. However, the movement to admit animals to have the rights to live and share the earth with us is not strong in Japan.
You've been involved in the movement, or as you say, the environmental movement, for quite some time. How have you seen it change over the past 20 years?
Past 20 years? Well, big change. Because at the first we started, everything is new to the public. So, for instance, that we have to begin with what kind of animal dolphins are. Now we can say dolphins, and then people understand what kind of animals. So it's really different. And as to the animal protection movement, and I make it distinguish that the two movements, but towards the end of 1990s, Peter Singer's Animal Right was translated into Japanese. And the latter part of 1990s, nature conservation groups or citizens took legal action to protect nature for the sake of animals. They brought the case into court, and there, in this case, its plaintiff was animals such as foxes, dragonflies, shells, birds. However, no group could win the suit. But we have this kind of movement, and also in 1998, this is what I did, but I wrote a report on orca capture, recognizing orca's right to freely move around the ocean. And in 1999, ELSA took up animal rights issue on its newsletter and introduced the translated Universal Declaration of Animal Rights. And the big event is in 2001, 4 years ago. Animal Summit was held in Nagoya by 29 animal, nature, environmental groups, including ELSA, with 400 attendants. And for the first time at the meeting, an announcement was made that we recognize animal rights just as we recognize human rights, and declared to make efforts to stop every abusive treatment to animals and coexist with them with friendship and love. This was a very good big event. And latest campaign that in July this year, ELSA's president and I translated Mark Bekoff's Strolling with Our King, Speaking for and Respecting Voiceless Animals into Japanese, and translated and published. And we took up this animal rights issue again on ELSA's website. So we are working to prevail the animal rights movement to progress, but it is not yet spread among people. But this is the animal rights movement, but the animal protection movement is going on.
are Japanese people becoming more sympathetic to the animal protection movement?
Yes, I think so.
What is the diet like there? Forgive my ignorance, but I'm not sure if veganism is at all prevalent in Japan, or if it's becoming westernized with, you know, a lot of dairy and fast food products.
Yes, so westernized and not veganism or vegetarianism, not preserving.
Do you think that is slowly starting to change as people become aware of animal welfare?
Yes, I think so. I'm afraid it takes time. Several days ago, there was a meeting to think about the welfare for captive animals. So they're working, but still, their point of view is from human point of view, not the animal viewpoint. But anyway, it is going on.
I know there have been several cases of mad cow disease in Japan.
Yes.
Has that turned a lot of people off of eating beef?
Yes and no. At that time, many people quit eating beef, but as soon as the beef was imported from Australia, the people start eating beef again.
I know it sounds like a new movement. Where do you see the animal protection movement moving in the future?
In the future, now they start to think about animal welfare, but I think animal welfare and enrichment of the environment and the facilities, and then I hope that the animal abuse will stop and dry fishery will end.
Is there anything people in the rest of the world can do to maybe help educate people about what's going on?
Yes, several things, because that we heard that the external pressure is very effective to stop dry fishery. Our investigation in Taiji and Futo and says that we found through the investigation Taiji fishermen and Futo fishermen and also the fishing cooperatives fear the external pressure. And I heard that one of the fishermen that to give the external pressure is the good way to stop the dry fishery. So I think that they can assist us by giving the pressure on the government and to the fishermen and the local government.
And I'll definitely put that information up on our website so people can write to the Japanese government.
Yes. And also, as you know, the Rick and Helen visit Taiji and Futo every year. So to visit Futo and Taiji and report the dry fishery on the site is very effective, I think. And draw media attention and have them report what is going on in Futo and Taiji is very important.
Indeed. Sakaya, thanks so much again for being with us, and thanks again for all the work that you do.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we'll definitely be at the protest, so we'll stay in touch.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Animal Voices on 89.5 CIUT. That was a pre-recorded interview with Rob and Sakaya Hemi.
We are about to jump into our interview with Jason Bayless, but quickly I just wanted to say for people who are interested in learning more about the avian flu and its connection to industrial food production, we have our interview from last week with Dr. Michael Greger online. So you can check it out at animalvoices.ca. I'm just going to read a quick little description of the Wake Up Screaming documentary that we're going to be talking with Jason about. He's sort of the star, but I guess in a lot of ways the punk bands that he was touring with through the Warped Tour are really the stars. So this is from the PETA website. This is Wake Up Screaming, a documentary film by Blockhead Skateboards founder Dave Berthold and professional skateboarder Laban Fadius. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. That follows the life of PETA's Jason Bayless as he negotiates his way through the fourth and most chaotic year of traveling with the Warped Tour. From hanging out with some of the most popular musicians on the planet and revisiting his Texas roots, to taking time out to do undercover investigations and dealing with some groupies of his own, Jason does it all. And this film gives a first-hand account of life on the road and all the chaos that it entails. Backstage and behind the scenes, Wake Up Screaming is a frenzied journey with one of today's most outspoken activists. One man, 48 cities, 100 punk bands. What could possibly go wrong? So, Jason Bayless, thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you. And everything goes wrong.
Everything goes wrong. So you're currently the Senior Youth Project Specialist for PETA. Tell us about what that entails before we jump into talking about the documentary.
Well, if I tell you that, then everybody will want my job. But
yeah.
Pretty much. I just travel the country, hang out with vegan bands, veggie bands, or people who are... The word animal rights and veganism is not in their vocabulary, and I kind of put it in their vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really good times on the road. I've met some wonderful people, hung out with all of our street team kids, and pretty much what I do.
And you've been pretty vital to making PETA 2 what it is today. When you were first starting with PETA way back when, they really didn't have something that was youth-oriented. So PETA 2 sounds like it's much more about reaching out to youth than the rest of what PETA does. How does PETA, I guess, reach youth besides the Warped Tour? Is it mostly just about going to bands, or is there other things that are specifically youth-oriented?
No, we pretty much hit all, youth culture icons from skaters, like Labian Fardius, one of the directors for this documentary.
Yeah.
And, we do everything from punk shows, skate parks. We're starting to work on video games. And
oh, yeah.
So, anywhere that's going to be in our target group of, the 13 to 25-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to be there and get that message out there because these kids, once they find out what's going on in factory farms, slaughterhouses, and in circuses, they're disgusted by it and they don't want to support it.
Yeah.
And it's good for them to start off young, get the truth, and then once they get the truth, they become, vital to the movement.
It does seem that more kids nowadays are promoting vegetarianism. Is that how it is?
Yeah. Not too long ago, a newspaper down in Florida just wrote that the largest group of people who are turning vegetarian is, this age group. And whether we have a part in it or people are just, talking about it more, nobody wants to support animal cruelty. Nobody wants to beat their dog. Nobody wants to, support somebody beating their dog. And that same attitude carries on to, nobody wants to hang a cow upside down or pay for people to hang a cow upside down so they can cut their throat.
Mm.
And do you think, like a lot of parents might think, oh, that's just a fad, they're rebelling against the industry. Do you think that's a fad, or is that actually a consciousness waking up?
Well, with everything, there's going to be a small percent of people who just jump on the bandwagon. But what I've seen, because I'm constantly on the road, I'm never really in my own home. Done this for going on my fifth year now, and I've met people when PETA 2 first started that had no idea about the cruelties involved in factory farms, and they, would kind of mock me. And then a couple months down the road on another tour, I'd run into them again, and they're like, I watched that video Meet and Meat,
right.
And I had no idea. So they started researching it, and maybe they wasn't vegetarian or vegan then, but by that third time or the fourth time that I ran into them again, they were full blown out in the streets, trying to make change in this world. And I think that's the way it happens with most people. It's those small steps of kind of waking up that, makes it where it's not a trend and not a fad. Because what's happening in this world is insane. Just to put it simply, and nobody wants to support it. So I don't think this is going to, the parents may say, yeah, it's a fad. it's a passing moment, but once you see the truth, it's hard to, you know, step away from it.
Jason, I'm curious how you approach the subject with teens without turning them off.
That's a good question. I just like I would with anybody, I don't try to talk down to them. It's kind of a hard question. The facts carry themselves. I mean, you don't have to do...
What would you say specifically, like if you were talking to someone that you just met and you wanted to bring it up, give us an example of how you would exactly sort of bring it up in a conversation.
Well, I'd first ask them, you know, pretty much, what are their ideas on it? I mean, what do they think of it? And then by judging by what they say, it's like for my example, I grew up on a farm. My parents raised and slaughtered animals every day. I would load them up to, take them to the slaughterhouse with my dad and then go play in the back field next to the slaughterhouse. And it wasn't the graphic nature of the slaughterhouse that turned me on. It was actually the thought of the violence that we promote against ourselves and against, you know, our fellow human brothers. And when I started seeing the connection between the violence, you know, gun violence and rape and everything, and started applying that to animals, it made sense. And I think everybody, you know, it's across the board pretty much simple, but everybody has that little stepping stone that's holding them back. Mm. And it just really depends where they come from. I'm trying to think of one of the best. Well, okay, for example, this last Warped Tour, a guy came up to the table, and he was a dairy farmer. And he said that he hated PETA because we are anti-factory farm and that they don't abuse animals and they treat their cattle with respect and all this other stuff. So I asked him just a simple question. I said, do you rip the babies away from the mothers as soon as they're born so you can harvest the milk? And he's like, yes. And I said, well, that's animal cruelty, man, because they have a bond, but, you know. And he, after we kind of broke down his situation and what he's actually doing on his dairy farm, he ended up agreeing that what he was doing was abuse. And, you know, so I followed up saying, well, he's in the perfect position to improve the lives of these animals.
Mm.
And he was really receptive to it. And hopefully he's making those changes now.
Whose idea was it to call the documentary that was made about you and touring around with the Warped Tour? Whose idea was it to call the documentary Wake Up Screaming?
It was kind of a collection of things. When I'm on the road, I'm kind of obsessive about being late. And I would wake up every morning and end up screaming, we gotta go! Get up!
Okay.
And there was one night, we had a day off, and it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and I just popped out of bed. I was like, we're late, we gotta go, let's get out of here! And everybody else, the film crew, started grabbing their gear and getting ready to go. And then the director looked at the clock and saw that it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and as he was turning to tell me, he's like, look, we don't have to go, we have a day off. I was already back in bed asleep, so it was kind of, you know.
So not wake. I guess it's a nice play on words because wake up screaming. I think that for some people anyway, when they start learning about a lot of animal rights related issues, that they feel like they wake up screaming. It's really intense to learn about all these different and how widespread the cruelty is. And then of course, wake up screaming. The fact that you're touring with punk bands.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. Like this is the Warped Tour. Some of the people that I was talking to yesterday that I was bumping into didn't even know what the Warped Tour is. Are most of the bands vegetarian, and what is the Warped Tour all about?
Well, the Warped Tour is the largest touring festival in North America. It's the 11th year going on the 12th year, and it's all the big... Well, the main stages are all the big name punk bands, and then there's several other small stages of upcoming bands and bands who's trying to, you know, make it in the industry. This year, there's 25% of the people on tour, including all the bands, the production, everybody who is on there for sponsors that were vegan or vegetarian. It was down a couple percent this year. It's just crazy because, you know, we'll start off and, you know, of course, every day we stop, we hit up every vegan restaurant, and Warped Tour has a tour book that lists every veggie restaurant and every stop that we go to. And so we would all go out there, and just through our little community of friends, the other bands would start saying, wow, this vegan and vegetarian food is great. So they would end up becoming vegan by the time the tour is over. Hmm. One good example that we're highlighting in the documentary is the band Bleed the Dream. And the guitar player, his name is Dave, and I met him on the Taste of Chaos tour, which is similar to Warped Tour, but happens in the winter. And I met him, and he was watching Meet Your Meat, and he decided that he told me, he goes, "We're on Warped Tour, I'll go vegan." And I was like, "All right, cool." So this year, he kept his promise, and he went vegan the whole tour. And I can't tell you the ending about it because you have to watch the movie.
Right. Okay, so what can people expect from Wake Up Screaming? Is this a documentary about you and your experience as an activist? Is this more about the bands? What is the movie about in your description?
Well, Wake Up Screaming is not your typical, I wouldn't even call it an animal rights film, because animal rights is in there because that's my life. That's what I do. Of course, it's always going to be there. But it's an in-depth look of how, you know, one person can make such a change in the world, and how, you know, the bands and everybody, they see the change and they step on board. And it's about all the behind the scenes, just the crazy. Cause Warped Tour, it's so hard to explain what Warped Tour is behind the scene because it's its own bubble. Hmm. I mean, it's 2.5 months of straight touring, and we have no idea what goes on out in the rest of the world during that whole time. It's its own, you know, energy, its own life force. And the craziest things that you could possibly imagine happening anywhere happens on the Warped Tour.
Right.
It's just insane. It's, you can't put words to it, so that's why we put a camera to it.
Okay, so you're in this sort of chaotic punk bubble, but you also left that bubble a little bit because you went down to Texas, and the documentary makers wanted to speak with your parents and wanted to see some of the places that you grew up and the places that you did your animal activism before you got involved with PETA.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect as well. The story of tracing this small town, kind of Texas farm boy, into this outspoken PETA activist. It seems to be a big part of what the documentary is about as well.
Yeah, it's, as the executive producer Marcy Henson said, the film is going to have a lot of Warped Tour to it, but what's going to carry the story is the story about my life and how my personal life is a train wreck because my focus is on animal rights. As we'll highlight in the film, I got married a little less than 2 years ago, and I got a divorce a year ago. And as the story plays out, the reason I got a divorce is because I'm constantly on the road. I'm never home for, you know, to have a relationship. And so it kind of touches on that, the hardships of being on the road. And, you know, even all the bands have the same problem because it's just always, you're always gone, you're always busy. But it also highlights, you know, the fun stuff. Like, you know, we go to Texas, we shoot guns because that's what Texans do.
Right.
And we had several demos. And, well, one good story is 2 years ago on the Warped Tour, Universal Circus happened to be setting up next to where Warped Tour was. And so I took my camera and went back there and started taking pictures of the animals because the confinements of the tigers and all the other animals were in, which is just insane. It was filthy. So I was taking photos of it, and it turned into this big battle with me and the circus people, and they ended up threatening to shoot me. And so it was real heated. We had a big crowd, and cops were called. So this year, I said, since I have a film crew with me, I want to go pay them another visit because they were actually not too far from where Warped Tour was. And so we went back in. I wanted to confront them about a kangaroo named Roxy that they killed. And the previous year, the kangaroo was actually diagnosed with lump jaw, which is the disease from being confined and poor diet and stuff. But the circus continued to work this animal. The kangaroo was used for boxing fights, for entertainment, which is pathetic. And so I wanted to go talk to him and find out why they killed Roxy. And to find out what happens, watch the movie, of course. But and then when I was in Texas with my family, we went to the slaughterhouse where my family used to take the animals so we could consume them, which turned into a big battle again. So, and then when we were in D.C., we did a Covance demo. For people who don't know about Covance is an animal laboratory where they take baby monkeys. You know, they're usually younger than the age of two, and they stick huge tubes down their nose, stick them in their stomach, and the tubes are so big that it actually punctures their sinus cavities and rips up their throats, and the monkeys slowly bleed and filthy conditions. So we had an undercover investigator go in and actually take footage of this, and we have a 129-page report that we gave to the USDA. So we decided to have a demo to encourage USDA to take action on this animal abuse. But we were confronted, as we were getting ready to set up for the demo, we were confronted by federal agents. And it was really fun because I've never seen, put it nicely, incompetence from federal agents in my life. But it's all documented on the film, so you can watch that as well.
Right. So there's lots of different elements.
Yeah.
When I had talked to you about Wake Up Screaming on the phone before, you were a little bit reluctant to do this movie. I mean, you're somebody who's all about the animals. I've honestly never seen an activist work as hard as you, and that the thought that someone was going to make a documentary about you seemed to make you a little bit uncomfortable.
I think it would make anybody uncomfortable,
yeah,
having cameras documenting your every move.
Some people would soak it up, though.
I mean, I totally enjoyed it. The film crew, everybody involved with the film is just excellent people. I really enjoyed hanging out with them. But, you know, having every inch of your life being documented so the world can see, mm-hmm, was kind of, you know, at first was kind of, yeah, this is kind of strange.
And one of the reasons why you sticked with the Warped Tour for so long, because you had sort of, you've been toying around with maybe doing other projects through PETA, is you told me an astounding number about the number of, I guess, teenagers and other people that you've been able to reach, and it's an enormous amount of people. How many people have you been able to talk to or put on your mailing list so far through the Warped Tour?
Well, PETA 2 is now 4 years old, and we have over 109,966 street teamers. And what our street teamers are is people who want to get active and actually become the voice for the animals. And what we do with the street team is we kind of give back to the community, to the people who want to get involved, is when they do actions, we give them we have a point system, and we give them points for whatever they do. It doesn't matter if it's going to a KFC, handing out leaflets, holding a demo, coming out and helping us table at places like the Warped Tour and other tours. And they can even be creative and do other things on their own. We'll give them a point system, which at a later time, when they accumulate enough points, they can trade it in for anything from, you know, our new PETA 2 hoodies to clothing to free tickets to shows. It's kind of a way of, you know, thanking the street team kids for all the hard work that they do. I mean, these kids are amazing. A couple of examples with, like, there's a clothing store called Forever 21, and we contacted them because they were selling rabbit fur in their store. And we're like, you know, there's no reason to wear rabbit fur. You know, told them the story of how, you know, these animals are tortured and so they can make clothing. And pretty much Forever 21 told us, they said, whatever, you know, they just kind of blew us off. And so we sticked our street team kids on them. And within 4 weeks, they wrote us back and said, all right, we'll take it out. And it's just our street team kids are just so amazing. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about PETA 2 is just how amazing these street team kids are. And another example is Wet Seal. Same scenario. They're selling rabbit fur in their store, and they blew us off. They said, like, yeah, we're not going to listen to you, whatever. And so we said, street team kids, have at them. And just on this Warped Tour alone, we had over 70,000 sign-ups on a petition against Wet Seal, and now Wet Seal has agreed to take fur out of the store. These kids are totally amazing. They're revolutionary. You know, they're just totally changing the face and the ideas of how we view animals.
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of the same idea from the question earlier. It's like about it being a trend or a fad and people saying that, but these kids are sticking to their guns.
It must be energizing for you to be around them and to see them excited about things. I know for me, growing up in a small town and being frustrated about a lot of things through high school and really wanting to affect some kind of change and not really knowing where to start, it must be amazing for some of these kids to have a focus and a whole group of other people who are willing to work with them to create positive changes and have projects that they can work on and actually see results.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it straight from the kids too. I get emails every day, and our street team coordinator Noah, he's constantly getting emails about how kids, you know, they're saying like, when they first got involved, they were just like, oh yeah, you know, it's sad. I don't know what to do. I don't feel empowered. And then a couple of weeks later, we get another email from them saying, this is what happened. I got my cafeteria to, you know, put soy milk in the cafeteria, or have non-meat alternatives in the cafeteria. They got their family to stop eating meat, or got their grandmother to stop wearing fur and all this. It's just, I mean, constantly bombarded with, you know, great stories that these kids are empowered by.
Mm-hmm. And so, and now that the film is coming out in November, right? So this month, is it going to be officially launched?
We're actually, the first screenings won't start until January.
Okay.
Because we're going to start hitting up film festivals. But the final edit will be complete roughly around November 15th.
Right.
And so if anybody wants to do a screening of this film, they can contact us. Go to the website, wakeupscreamingmovie.com, or email us at wakeupscreamingmovie@peta2.com, and let us know what you want to do, and we can totally set you up with the DVD and get a screening set up for you.
Yeah. And so now I guess you're going to do at least one more year with the Warped Tour, because through the documentary someone gets to win some kind of trip with you. So you're tied in for another year.
Yeah. There's definitely talk about, we're going to be running contests all throughout the year, where you can win free DVDs, all types of contests, concert tickets and everything. And right now there's talks that one of the grand prizes is going to be spend a week, I think it's a week, with me next year on the 2006 Warped Tour. So you get to hang out with me, not that.
Right.
And all the bands, and see firsthand of how crazy this tour is. You know, it really is.
Great. So you're gonna be pretty much, I guess pretty much wrapped up in the Warped Tour for a while. But after the Warped Tour stuff is finally done, what kind of directions do you want to see yourself go with PETA, or what are some of the new things that you're hoping to accomplish through PETA?
Well, I mean, I'm very happy where I'm at with PETA. I mean, it's absolutely the best job in the world, and it's not like I'm stagnant with just PETA too, because I do other things for other departments, for like our vegan department and our investigation department and stuff. So I'm always doing something, and as long as I can keep doing something that gets the word out there, even if it just inspires one individual to become vegan, become more aware of the issues, then, you know, as long as I get one every day, I'm totally happy with it.
Right. And so do you think you're just kind of an inherent workaholic, and, you know, do you think you just have boundless energy because you have boundless energy? Is there actual advice or ideas that you would give people about how to not burn out? You've been going really, really hard for a number of years, and I'm wondering how you do it.
I don't know. I mean, everybody knows that a vegan diet gives you more energy.
So. Right. Yeah, but your vegan diet, I wonder sometimes. You're the king of, like, greasy vegan food. You're an interesting vegan ambassador that way.
Yes, I've been labeled the biggest vegan junk food.
Right.
But, I mean, that's my life.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Dr. Pepper and caffeine and all the sugar products that I consume
helps.
And for all of the people who want to know more about vegan junk food, can go to Accidentally Vegan on our GoVeg.com website.
Right.
Find out all the fun vegan junk food.
Right. You know, I mean, over the past few years, I mean, I've been vegan for about 8 years, and watching how things have changed just in terms of perceptions of veganism and vegetarianism, I mean, this documentary, the Wake Up Screaming documentary, is a classic example of how veganism and vegetarianism and animal rights really isn't just associated with sort of a hippie crowd anymore, that it's kind of gotten into these other subcultures. So it's interesting to see that. I don't know if it's a shift or if it's just a broadening out of which communities get associated with these issues.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's always been a subculture issue, like you're saying, you know. Thank goodness it's no longer hippie. No
right.
offense to hippies, but, you know.
Everybody always says that. No offense to hippies, though, but I'm glad it's not a hippie movement.
It's also been, you know, hardcore punk movement. I mean, if you look in the early 70s of punk music, a lot of lyrics were written about vegetarianism or animal rights back then. more British bands than U.S. bands, but still there was a lot of vegan and vegetarians back then. And I think, not to sound old, but since the invention of the Internet, we've been able to send videos and articles and get the information out there much quicker, and people can actually research it more than having to go to a cheesy library where the books that you may want to read are not there, or they're slant, you know, catering to one view. It's just a great time,
yeah,
you know, to be an activist.
Yeah, I mean, even through the Animal Voices website, I was checking our statistics today, and, you know, it's hard to tell what are random hits but and what aren't, but we have people listening from Cambodia.
Oh, wow.
Singapore. I would like to say a shout out to our the people that are listening from Cambodia, people who are listening
in
all
Tasmania today
and South Africa. Like, it's just incredible to me what the internet has done, with, regardless of the politics of the internet. We won't get into that. But Jason, wanted to thank you so much for being on the program. I hope that we get to check out your documentary very soon, and send us some copies, because we would love to give out to our listeners.
I would totally do that.
I'll plug the website again. It's wakeupscreamingmovie.com. Learn more about the Warped Tour from behind the scenes perspectives, and find out more about Jason Bayless, his relentless efforts to raise awareness about animal rights and reach youth. Thank you for being inspiring, Jason, doing the documentary. We look forward to seeing it.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's so exciting.
We've had you on the program a number of years ago, so it's nice to have you, and it's nice to have you back again. Take care.
Bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going a little bit over our time, so we're going to get off the air and hand it over to Roadrunner, so stay tuned.